नमः। Vrinnai hai tulsi devyai, priyai hai kesavashacha, Vishnu bhakti prade devi, satcha vacha namo namaha. Jai Tulsi Maharani, Tulsi Maharani ki jai. We're just going to continue the same verse we were reading yesterday. All right, let's see. All right. All ready? Good to see everybody. Want to welcome to Shori. And Philip too. You leaving today or? Too bad. You stay forever. Did you make it to last night's dinner?
No. Okay.
All right. So we're going to continue with this verse from the Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita, text 5. We're going to continue with. About how to relate to different Vaishnavas. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Bihari.
Yeah.
Vishnu Pad, Padamahamsa Paravidakacharya, Olstu Teda, Satashi Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhayachananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharshila Prabhupad Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijaya Anandagoti Vaishnava Vrinda Kijaya Nam Acharya Srila Hoyadas Thakur Kijaya Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Vakta Vrinda Kijaya Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopagopata Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Navadeepdam Kijai, Jagadavasami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Shimati Tulasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, so, Om Gana Timidanda Shaganjana Shalakaya. Chakshuram Minitam Yenitas Mai Shivavena Maha. So, we're reading from text 5 in the middle of the purport, and I'm just going to read the Sanskrit again and the translation, and then we continue at the same point that we were at. So, Krishneti yasya giritam manasa driheta dikshasti chet praneti vishcha bhajantam isham shushrushaya bhajana vigyam ananyam anya nindari shunya vidam ipsita sangha labhya. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity, and one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Okay. Actually, I have a question for all of you. What is, this is you who was listening yesterday, what is Prabhupada's definition of an uttamadhikari here in the purport?
What is that he's not doing any service?
He's not doing any service?
I mean, he's thinking that he's not doing any service.
Yeah, well, yeah, but Prabhupada's definition. That's true, but I gave a ontological description. But what is the practical, down-to-earth description of an uttamadhikari? The functional. Remember I used the word functional? Yeah. There's two words. Ontological and functional. That's a fancy word. As I mentioned yesterday, you could impress people with that word. Ontological means what is his constitutional position, basically. Functional means what does he do? So what's the functional definition of an uttamadhikari? Does anyone remember yesterday's class? Yeah.
He's constantly meditating on how to spread the Hare Krishna movement.
Yeah, and?
Fully engaged in
devotional service, never deviates, yeah. So that's the functional definition. So this is quite interesting because generally, as I mentioned yesterday, we're looking for someone who faints in ecstasy. Who makes our hair stand on end, you know. So charisma is actually not one of the qualities of a pure devotee. You have charisma. Everyone knows what charisma is? I'll have to explain that word. That means when a very nice Bollywood star, for those of you coming from India, or a very nice rock and roll star, whatever you call them nowadays, you know, punk, junk, whatever type of star, comes and you just say, wow. Like I remember in the 1960s, there was the Beatles, and the girls would just show symptoms of ecstasy when they saw them. They go, oh, George, John, Ringo. I don't know. You've probably seen pictures or films of that. And they had to have garbs. These beetles, that's not the insects, but they had to have guards on them so that the girls wouldn't tear them to pieces. Seriously. Because the girls were just like reaching out. So, you know, there's charisma, whatever, but we should use our intelligence in seeing who is actually advanced in devotional service, not simply our emotions. Emotions are all right. We have no problem with them. At least I don't have a problem with them. You do. So, emotions are all right. We're not denying them, suppressing them, repressing them. But you don't judge based on emotion. You judge based on buddhi, intelligence, mature discrimination, that you say, well, this is a pure devotee, even though he doesn't look like a rock and roll star, doesn't act like a rock and roll star, and maybe he doesn't even chant well in terms of, you know, he can't keep a tune. So, you know, generally, you know, if someone keeps a tune nicely, we think they're an advanced devotee. Just like people listen to even non-devotees chanting. I'm not going to mention any names. But non-devotees chant, even devotees listen to them and say, oh, I'm so inspired to hear. But the person is a disciple of Nim Karoli Baba, who is a Pukka Mayavadi. You understand Pukka Mayavadi? Yeah, it means a really good Mayavadi. That's a contradiction in terms. You know, it's called an oxymoron. There's another word for you all to learn. Oxymoron means you have a contradiction, like a hot ice. That's a contradiction in terms. So so he's a Mayavadi, doesn't believe in Krishna, is not a vegetarian, and about 50% of the devotees have his CDs and listen to him. And in addition to chanting Hare Krishna, he chants all sorts of other mantras to demigods or, you know, whatever else he wants to chant. So, because we accept things based on emotions rather than on just intelligence, you know. So we have to really sharpen our intelligence to be able to discriminate. That's, intelligence means the ability to discriminate based upon one's objective in life. I'm giving it a definition right now. But you have a goal or objective in life, and then you discriminate what is favorable and what is not favorable based upon that objective and also based upon Shastra, if one is a devotee. So, intelligence. Okay, let's continue the purport. One should not accept a spiritual master without following his instructions. Nor should one accept a spiritual master just to make a fashionable show of spiritual life. What was the example I gave yesterday? We have to test you to make sure you are not sleeping. Of how a disciple nowadays follows the guru or gets the guru's blessings. What did I say?
Retrospectively.
Yeah, retrospectively. He or she does something, and they say, Guru Maharaj can have your blessings. Another way they do it is they cry a lot. You know, in other words, it's not only retrospective. Sometimes they say, Guru Maharaj, can I do this? And I say, well, I don't think it's a good idea. Really? You have to let me do it. I'm so attached. That's another way. But it's actually, Prabhupada said he only asked his spiritual master one question. What was that question? How can I serve you? Not, you know, what can you do for me? Like there's this famous quote was made by John F. Kennedy. Yeah. You know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. So we should have ask not what your guru can do for you, what you can do for your guru. That's called parallel construction, for those of you who need to know. And if you use parallel construction, it's a very powerful linguistic technique. You understand? If you're an orator, if you use parallel construction, like it's parallel. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And it's just like, it psychologically affects people. So, no one should accept a spiritual master just to make a fashionable show of spiritual life. One must be jijyasu, very much inquisitive, to learn from the bona fide spiritual master. The inquiries one makes should strictly pertain to transcendental science, jijyasu she uttama. The word uttama refers to that which is above material knowledge. Tama means the darkness of this material world, and ut means transcendental. Generally, people are very interested in inquiring about mundane subject matters, But when one has lost such interest and is simply interested in transcendental subject matters, he is quite fit for being initiated. And that's a really heavy prerequisite. Prabhupada says, one who's lost such interest. I think if we waited for everyone to lose interest before they took initiation, we wouldn't have any disciples. Anyway, so... So when one is actually initiated by the Bodhisattva, because initiation is more than the ceremony. Initiation is basically to accept the order of the spiritual master and to serve the mission of the spiritual master. So when one is actually initiated by the bona fide spiritual master, and when he seriously engages in the service of the Lord, he should be accepted as a Majjhima Adhikari. So that's also Prabhupada's functional definition of Majjhima Adhikari. Remember, he talked about functional. So functional means what you can see on the outside. You can't see a lot on the outside. You can't see if someone's absorbed in Krishna prema from the outside. But you can see functionally what one is doing, how one is following. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna is so sublime that if one chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra offenselessly, carefully avoiding the 10 offenses, he can certainly be gradually elevated to the point of understanding that there is no difference between the holy name of the Lord and the Lord himself. One who has reached such an understanding should be very much respected by neophyte devotees. One should know for certain that without chanting the holy name of the Lord offenselessly, one cannot be a proper candidate for advancement in Krishna consciousness. In the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhima Lila 22:69, it is said, Yahara kamala shrada se kanishta jan krame krame tenho bhakti hobe utam. One whose faith is soft and pliable, pliable means like flexible, is called a neophyte, but by gradually following the process, he will rise to the platform of a first-class devotee. Everyone begins his devotional life from the neophyte stage. But if one properly finishes chanting the prescribed number of rounds of Harinam, he is elevated step by step to the highest platform, Uttama Adhikari. And that's also important. Prabhupada says everyone begins his devotional life from the neophyte stage. Neophyte stage means the four basic reasons one comes to Krishna consciousness. Isn't it? They want wealth, they're inquisitive, they want knowledge, or they're in distress. So every one of us, you know, unless you happen to be an interested devotee, anyone here, raise your hand. anyone here is in... Otherwise, you have these different desires. So the idea is, sometimes you have to engage your desires in Krishna consciousness, like Dhruva. He was definitely not on the highest platform when he first started performing devotional service. He wanted a great kingdom. And by the time he achieved perfection, he gave up those desires. As stated in the Harivaktu Shudaya, he was looking for some pieces of broken glass and he found a wonderful gem, Krishna. The Krishna conscious movement prescribes 16 rounds daily because people in the Western countries cannot concentrate for long periods while chanting on beats. That's what Prabhupada found out. When he asked us to chant 64 rounds, they said, impossible. Then Prabhupada said, 32. They said, impossible. And Prabhupada said, all right, no less than 16. Actually, Prabhupada did not chant 64 rounds a day. Prabhupada chanted 16 rounds every day, but he was engaged full-time in preaching Krishna consciousness. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur made that requirement for his disciples. Anyone who wasn't engaged in preaching, if they were back in the temple, because they had ringing bells, then they would have to chant 64 rounds a day. I mean, not the householders, obviously, but the brahmacharis, they would have to, or sannyasis, if they stayed back. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very strict with his sannyasis. He wouldn't even let them go in a car unless they were going on a preaching engagement. Even if they had to go to a doctor, they had to walk or take a rickshaw or something like that. But the cars were only for preaching. He was so strict with the sannyasis. He was so heavy. I mean, just like, I don't know if I told the story here, that he sent Bhan Maharaj to the Western world to preach Krishna consciousness to England, actually. And Van Maharaj had a donation set, one of the Maharajas, that means not sannyasi, but you know, the Maharajas in India, was ready to give a donation to build a temple in London. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so displeased with Van Maharaj because of something, you know, the attitude or something. He told the Maharaj he was going to give the money, don't give him the money. That's amazing, isn't it? So he was such a heavy spiritual master. And of course, having him, of course I have him as my grand spiritual master, he's kinder to me. But to his disciples, he was so heavy. And of course, Prabhupada wasn't that heavy. But Prabhupada said the grandfather spiritual master is kinder than the actual spiritual master. That's nice. And you know, most of you therefore have, I think everybody in this room has Prabhupada as the grand spiritual master, so you get more mercy than me. So however, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that unless one chants at least 64 rounds of japa, 100,000 names, he is considered fallen, patita. According to his calculation, practically every one of us has fallen, but because we are trying to serve the Supreme Lord with all seriousness and without duplicity, we can expect the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is famous as Patita Pavana, deliverer of the fallen. So another point is that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not eat over anyone's house unless they chanted 64 rounds. So he couldn't be doing the program I'm doing, you know, going to people's houses. You know, I go to people's houses, how many rounds you chant? Well, two, three. So, but he would go and he said, how many rounds you chant? 32. No, I can't eat at your house. He was so strict. So we're very fortunate we have Prabhupada. I don't know what we would do without Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada one time was told by this Allen Ginsberg. I don't know if you've heard of Allen Ginsberg. He was just, anyway, pretty interesting character. Chanted Hare Krishna but didn't follow any other rule and regulation. And he was said to Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami, you are very strict. And Prabhupada said, no, I am very lenient. So when Sri Satyaraja Khan, the great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, asked the Lord how a Vaishnava should be recognized, the Lord replied, Prabhu kahi, that means Prabhu, the Lord said, yanura mukhi shuni eka bar, Krishna nama se puja, Shreshta Savakar. If one hears a person even say the word of Krishna once, that person should be accepted as the best man out of the common group. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, 15th chapter, text 106. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, Adaiva Yanra Mukhe Eka Krishna Nam Seta Vaishnava Kuri ha tanhara saman. One who is interested in chanting the holy names of Krishna or by practice likes to chant Krishna's holy names should be accepted as a Vaishnava and offered respects as such at least within one's mind. This is all reiterating what the verse has actually said. Because Rupa Goswami is simply taking Lord Chaitanya's teachings and presenting them in his own words. So it's not that he's coming up with something unique. So Chaitanya Charitamrita, 15th chapter, Madhya Lila, text 111. One of our friends, a famous English musician, who's that?
George Harrison.
Has become attracted to chanting the holy names of Krishna, and even in his records he has several times mentioned the holy name of Krishna. At his home he offers respects to pictures of Krishna, and also to the preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement. In all regards, he has a very high estimation for Krishna's name and Krishna's activities. Therefore, we offer respects to him without reservation, for we are actually seeing that this gentleman is advancing gradually in Krishna consciousness. Such a person should always be shown respect. The conclusion is that anyone who is trying to advance in Krishna consciousness by regularly chanting the holy name should always be respected by Vaishnavas. On the other hand, we have witnessed that some of our contemporaries, does everybody know what a contemporary is? That means as godbrothers, basically. That's a fancy. Instead of Prabhupada just saying, my God, brothers, he's been a little kind. Contemporaries. That means people who are at the same age, you know, or they're in the same field or something like that, but just, you know, people work together. Who are supposed to be great preachers have gradually fallen into the material conception of life because they have failed to chant the holy name of the Lord. Prabhupada said sometimes that some of his gauravas, none of whom want to commit offenses, are just making so many transcendental arrangements to get rotis. And, you know, Prabhupada was very heavy. Of course, later on when he was getting ready to leave the planet, he apologized, but he was trying to protect us because many of his godbrothers, they tried to interfere with our getting property in Mayapur. And one of his godbrothers even reinitiated some of Prabhupada's disciples. And they wouldn't let Prabhupada's letters get to that disciple. Anyway, it was Bon Maharaj again, who we mentioned before. And he said, well, your guru doesn't care about you anymore. And so I have to reinitiate. So he reinitiated this disciple of Prabhupada. So there was a lot of envy Prabhupada had to deal with, because they failed to chant properly the holy name of the Lord. Because if you chant properly the holy name of the Lord, you're going to get some information or intelligence that, you know, Krishna's not pleased with you. And if you're a little sincere, you're not going to act in an improper way. I mean, even if you have some envy in your heart, let's say I was one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, and Prabhupada came to Mayapur and he wanted to purchase some land, and I'm feeling envy. Oh, he's doing better than me. So let's say I experience that envy in my heart, but then I identify it. I'm intelligent enough to say, that's envy. It's not really productive for my Krishna consciousness. And then I ignore it. I don't let that envy take fruit, you know, to influence my activities. That even in spite of feeling this symptom of envy in my heart, I still would help Prabhupada. That's actually important. So if you chant properly, you can tolerate these things, like we were reading in the previous verse, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Karta Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udra Pashta Vegam. So if one is actually serious, the impulses may come of envy or lust, anger, greed, or, you know, tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. The impulses may come, but one doesn't give in to them. He tolerates them. You know, we have so many impulses. I mean, just like myself, because I'm controlling my diet, you know, if I see a pizza, there's an impulse to eat the pizza. You know, it's immediate impulse, thinking, feeling, willing. But then I know, you know, this is not the best thing for my health, or sweets, or anything like that. You know, I'm still attracted to those things. You know, I'd love to eat a laddu, but... but then my intelligence said, you know, that's how one can control habits or addictions. You know, I was speaking to someone last night about addictions. So, you're intelligent. You know, you want to do it, but your intelligence kicks in and you say, no, this is not my goal in life. This is not good for my health. It's not good for my spiritual life. So I'm not going to do it. And then you don't meditate on it. Because if you keep meditating on it, you'll give in eventually. Mm-hmm. Like even if my intelligence is strong, but if I keep meditating on pizza, for example, and remember the taste of it, then it's like Pavlovian dogs salivating. Mm-hmm. And then you just go, woo! Nobody will know! Anyway, so while giving instructions to Sanatana Goswami, we're going to try to finish. Actually, we can finish this. We can finish this purport today. So we can go on next day to the next verse. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. While giving instructions to Sanatana Goswami, Nanda Uncle. Nanda Uncle, it's good to see you. Kakashri. So while giving instructions to Sanatana Goswami, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu divided devotional service into three categories. Shastra Yukti Nahi Jan Drida Shadavan Majjama Adhikari Se Mahabhagyavan. Do you notice when I do the Bengali, I pronounce it differently than Sanskrit, because that's how the endings are pronounced differently, and it's a different inflection. A person whose conclusive knowledge of Shastras is not very strong, but who has developed firm faith in accepting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and who is also undeterred in the execution of his prescribed devotional service, should be considered a Majjhima Adhikari. That's how we defined it yesterday. Another definition, you know, Majjhima Adhikari has firm faith, but he doesn't know the Shastra that well. Such a person is very fortunate. That's from the CC, Majjhalila, 22nd chapter, text 67. A Majjhima Adhikari is a Shraddhavan, a staunchly faithful person, and he is actually a candidate for further advancement in devotional service. Therefore, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Majjhalila, 22nd chapter, text 64, it is said, Shadavanjan hoya bhakti adhikar uttama madhyama kanishta shada anusar. One becomes qualified as a devotee on the elementary platform, the immediate intermediate platform, and the highest platform in devotional service according to the development of his shada. That means faith. Again, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and this is actually one of the key verses we're going to read right now, in the Majjhalila, 22nd chapter, text 62, it is said, Shada sabbe vaswa shuk chakahe sudrida nishtya krishna bhakti koya sarva karma kritahoi. This is the definition of faith. By rendering transcendental service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. This confident, firm faith, favorable to the discharge of devotional service, is called Shada. Shraddha, faith in Krishna, is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Faith means strong faith. The words of Bhagavad Gita are authoritative instructions for faithful men, as it is, without interpretation. This was the way Arjuna accepted Bhagavad Gita. After hearing Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna told Krishna, Sarvamitad vritammanye yan maam vidasi keshava. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. It's in the Gita, this 10th chapter, text 14. So this verse, we should remember this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He defines faith, and I'm putting in my own words, as having the absolute conviction that if you do what Krishna wants, what the Guru says, then you're going to accomplish everything, all your goals in life. That's sarva karma kritahoi. I mean, that everything you want to have. That means Krishna consciousness. You don't need to change. I mean, I'll give you a practical application of that because it's important to understand practically. Like sometimes we think that we need to go outside of ISKCON to get instruction to come to a higher platform of devotional service. That, you know, we think, oh, Prabhupada's instructions, they're not enough. So therefore we need to go to this other organization where they teach Raghunuga Bhakti to us. You know, how to be a gopi in 10 days or less. That's nice, isn't it? I wish I could learn that in 10 days or less. So anyway, so we don't have that faith. It's simply by serving Prabhupada that everything will be revealed. You know, if you serve Prabhupada's mission, we don't have that faith that actually eventually Krishna will reveal what our real nature is. But we think we have to go to some Radhakund Babaji to find that out. So firm faith for an ISKCON devotee means having faith that simply serving Prabhupada's mission and following Prabhupada's instructions, reading Prabhupada's books. And of course, Prabhupada also said we can read the books of the Acharyas too. But not deviating a whit from Prabhupada's instructions. Then we're going to reach perfection. We don't need to go outside. So that's a practical application of firm faith. This is the correct way of understanding Bhagavad Gita, and this is called Shraddha. It is not that one accepts a portion of the Bhagavad Gita according to his whimsical interpretations and then rejects another portion. This is not Shraddha. Shraddha means accepting the instructions of Bhagavad Gita in their totality, especially the last instruction, Sarvadhamam Purichaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender to me, 1866. When one becomes completely faithful in regard to this instruction, one's strong faith becomes the basis for advancing in spiritual life. So can you think of any examples that Prabhupada gave of people who didn't have full faith in the Bhagavad Gita? It'll be interactive today. And this one is not so popular, you don't want to speak about this in public. One is Mahatma Gandhi. Because he actually said at one point, you know, he read the Bhagavad Gita, derived inspiration, but he said, you know, I don't know if Krishna actually existed. So, also he took the Bhagavad Gita as a text on nonviolence. It's not a text on nonviolence or violence. I mean, spiritually nonviolence, but it doesn't, because at the end of speaking the Bhagavad Gita, you know, what happened? There's a hell of a lot of fighting. Right? You know, Arjuna said, now I'm ready to fight. If it was a text on nonviolence, Arjuna would have said, you know, peace and love, Krishna, all you need is love. But at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, I'm ready to go. Anyway, so, and there's another example, too, of Dr. Radhakrishna, who said, this famous verse, the president, he was the president of India. He read the Bhagavad Gita. He wrote his commentary, too. Prabhupada actually used Radhakrishna's Gita in the beginning days of the movement, because Prabhupada said the translation was more or less all right. Because he didn't have his own Gita translated or printed at that time. So Dr. Radhakrishna said, in regard to the verse Man Mana Bhava Man Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru, that it's not to the person Krishna you have to surrender, but to the unborn beginningness within Krishna. That's a lack of surrender. Just like if someone is married and the husband says, you have to surrender to me, and she said, the wife says, I'm going to surrender to the unborn beginningless within you, which means she wants to do her own damn thing, right? Or you work at work, you know, the boss says, you know, you have to listen to me, you know? And you say, yes, I'm going to surrender to the unborn beginningless you. You wouldn't keep that job for very long. When one fully engages in chanting a Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he gradually realizes his own spiritual identity. Wow. Who here has realized their own spiritual identity? No one. So that means we have to chant better. So unless one faithfully chants, that means you realize who you are in the spiritual world. It's like the sun coming up in the morning. In the beginning, there's a little bit of, you know, shadows and black and white stuff and everything. And then eventually you see the colors and you see things very, very clearly. So that's what happens when you chant, you know. You actually get a little glimpse. You think, well, I'm really attracted to this particular pastime and this particular devotee. But one has to do it at the right stage. I've mentioned previously that when I first joined the movement, I thought I was a coward boy. You know, because we were all brahmacharis, so we would sit together and say, I'm a coward boy too. Because we were buddies, you know, so... You know, we weren't about to say, I'm a gopi. It'd have been really embarrassing, you know, in the brahmacharya ashram. They would say, get the hell out of here if you're a gopi. Can you imagine that? Yeah. You're in the wrong ashram, you know. Nowadays, of course, you got to have like 3 or 4 ashrams in the temple, according to people's propensities. I mean, just to be practical. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about what that means. So, anyway, that's very interesting. So let's continue. Yes. Unless one is faithfully chants the Hare Krishna mantra, Krishna does not reveal himself. Sevan mukhehi jivado swayamevas brachita. It's from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We cannot realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by any artificial means. We must engage faithfully in the service of the Lord. Such service begins with the tongue. Jiva. Seva mukhehi jivado. Which means that we should always chant the holy names of the Lord and accept Krishna what? Prasad. We should not chant or accept anything else. When this process is faithfully followed, the Supreme Lord reveals himself to the devotee. When a person realizes himself to be an eternal servitor of Krishna, he loses interest in everything but Krishna's service. Always thinking of Krishna, devising means by which to spread the holy name of Krishna, he understands that his only business is spreading the Krishna conscious movement all over the world. Such a person is to be recognized as an uttamadhikari. There's that functional definition again. This is a really important point, the functional definition of uttamadhikari. And his association should be immediately accepted according to the 6 processes, the dati, prati, granati, etc. Indeed, the advanced Uttama Adhikari Vaishnava should be accepted as a spiritual master. Everything one possesses should be offered to him, for it is enjoined that one should deliver whatever he has to the spiritual master. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had one disciple who would turn his whole salary over to him. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would give him whatever money he needed to maintain his wife and family. That's a high standard. Prabhupada didn't do that. The brahmachari in particular is supposed to beg alms from others and offer them to the spiritual master. That means, you know, he goes out and says, you know, and actually there's an interesting story, right? Here we have time to tell it. There's a story in the Mahabharata of how brahmachari got trained up that way. That once upon a time, the spiritual master said to the brahmachari, you weigh too much. So I'm going to send you out to take care of the cows. And this way you'll get some exercise and lose weight. So he sent him out to take care of the cows. This is a story from the Mahabharata. And he was taking care of the cows, and he came back a few days later, and, you know, he got bigger. The spiritual master said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm out there, and you can take advantage. I beg from people, you know, and they give me some food. Madhukari. So he was begging, and he was getting food and getting bigger. So the guru said, no, no, whatever you beg, you have to offer to me first, and if I give you something, it's all right. So he went out again, and a few days later, he was getting bigger. And the guru said, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm begging for you, Gurudev, once, and begging for me twice. The second time. And the guru said, this is nonsense. So then the guru sent him out again. And then the next time he came back, it was even bigger. And the guru said, what are you doing? Aren't you offering everything to me? And he said, yes, Gurudev, I'm not taking anything for myself, but, you know, I'm milking the cows, so I'm drinking the milk from the cows. He liked to eat a lot. So so then the guru said, all right, the cow milk is meant for the calves, so leave it over for the calves. All right, so then he came back a few days, and he was still getting bigger. And the guru said, what are you doing? He said, well, the calves, while they're eating, drinking the milk, there's a little froth coming from their mouth, so I just like go around. And the guru said, no, you cannot do that. And so eventually he was out taking care of the cows, and he got so hungry he just like saw some trees and started eating the leaves of the trees, and he became blind because he was eating that. And then he fell into a ditch, and the guru sent out his disciples to try to find this disciple, and they found him in a ditch, and the guru, instead of taking him out of the ditch, said, pray to the Ashwini Kumaras, they'll give you your sight back. So he prayed to the Ashwini Kumaras, and what happened is the Ashwini Kumaras came and they offered him some cake. He said, you eat this cake and you get your sight back. He said, no, I can't eat cake without my spiritual master's permission. And then he passed the test and got his sight back. It's a heavy test. So we'll be doing that. We'll be doing that today with devotees. So that's an interesting test. No, we give the opposite test when we sit down and visit people's homes. We have the disciples sit next to them. We give them everything to eat, and they have to finish everything that's on my plate. So that's the opposite type of test. So I remember there was one devotee who went with us in Annamoy in Sydney. And after one day with us, he said, I'll never go with you again, Maharaj. Because he got so sick, because I put everything on his plate. So, anyway, so that's the story. But really, in the traditional ashram, someone would not eat unless the guru called him, you know, please, it's time to eat. That's actually the tradition. However, one should not imitate the behavior in advanced devotee of Mahabhagavat without being self-realized, for by such imitation, one will be eventually degraded. And that actually happened in ISKCON. I mean, just to be practical, like when Prabhupada left, there were some of the people who became gurus who imitated Prabhupada, and they didn't have the position or realization. We don't want to imitate, we want to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami advises that the devotee to be intelligent enough to distinguish between the Kanishta Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. The devotee should really raining. The devotee should also know his position and not try to imitate a devotee situated on a higher platform. At least there was chanting Hare Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given some practical hints to the effect that an Uttama Arakari Vaishnava can be recognized by his ability to convert many fallen souls to Vaishnavism. That's another functional definition. You see all these different functional definitions? One should not become a spiritual master unless he has attained the platform of Uttama Arakari. A neophyte Vaishnava or Vaishnava situated on the intermediate platform could also accept disciples, but such disciples must be on the same platform, and it should be understood that they cannot advance very well toward the ultimate goal of life under his insufficient guidance. So this is one of the arguments the Rifiks use. You've heard of Rifiks before? They say, you know, you have to approach Prabhupada and take initiation from Prabhupada. Well, the point is that in ISKCON, everybody is put on Prabhupada's guidance. So there's no question of insufficient guidance, and the bona fide guru is actually repeating the words and guiding people according to Prabhupada. So there, he's the medium by which Prabhupada, if he's actually bona fide, he's the medium by which Prabhupada's mercy is coming through. Therefore, a disciple should be careful to accept an Uttama Adhikari as a spiritual master. So that's the end of this purport. So we'll take questions. Questions, comment? Yeah.
For what? Can Maharaj, like a person who has taken initiation, and then if he is not able to follow, to chant 16 rounds, he chants 4 rounds or 8 rounds.
After initiation.
After initiation, what will be his fate? Like, what will
he he has to reveal his mind to his guru. I mean, there are certain extenuating circumstances. I mean, I'll give you an example of extenuating circumstances. Let's say there's a lady who takes initiation, and somehow or other she gives birth to quintuplets. You know what a quintuplet is?
Five
at once. Five for the price of one. So, I mean, I think she'd have a lot of difficulty finishing 16 rounds. Unless she chants it on the toes of her kids, you know. So there's certain what's called extenuating circumstances, which means Krishna understands. So there's certain times, you know, the emergency situations, or especially I personally make that exception, you know, for ladies who have kids, because it's, you know, what can you do? It's not easy. You got to be changing diapers. We call them nappies here. Changing nappies. You got to be up all night long. The kid is It's hard. You know, practically it's the hardest service than being a sannyasi guru or anything like that. Being a mother is practically the hardest service. I mean, I would never want that service. unless I could be Krishna's mother or something. Then Krishna's crying would be transcendental and blissful. And he would also play his flute sometimes. So there are extenuating circumstances. So one discusses, it's not that one gets like really paranoid, oh, I'm going to hell now. You know, we have this obsessive compulsive tendency. Some people do. I mean, in religions, that they become, you know, just really obsessive about things. Oh, like I mentioned the other day, oh, I killed the bed bugs in my bed when they were biting me. But they weren't poisonous. They're all devotees of Krishna, and Krishna's in every bed bug's heart. It's true. Krishna is in every bed bug's heart. But you really don't want to get too crazy about living in the material world. I mean, otherwise, you wouldn't be able to walk on grass, or ride a car, or do so many things that entail killing or hurting living entities. So you gotta really be intelligent. So anyway, so it's like that. So one approaches the guru and says, "My dear Guru Dave, I'm in a coma." I know you couldn't speak when you're in a coma. My dear Guru Dave, my wife yelled at me last night. And I'm too much anxiety. No, that's not an excuse. Then you should chant more. Actually, when there's that sort of difficulty, that should encourage you to take shelter in Krishna's names. when there's instead of being in anxiety, you know, things happen in the material world, you know, it's financial anxiety or some other anxiety. Then, I mean, just like I was in anxiety in Fiji because of the elections. Because I thought if, you know, the other party won, our preaching would be hindered, so many people would leave Fiji, you know, the intelligent class would leave Fiji. So I was praying to Krishna. I chanted extra rounds so that Bunyanirama would win the election. I said, my dear Lord Krishna, please let Fiji first win. Because that was for the movement. You know, for the movement. I was thinking of the welfare of the movement. So, you know, sometimes you got to pray for material things like that. Political prayers. So, yeah, anyway, so Krishna knows. So you just reveal to the Guru, my dear Gurudev, for some reason or other, I'm not able to finish my rounds. And the Guru will instruct you accordingly. It's not, you know, it's not such a heavy thing. I mean, under ordinary circumstances, yes, we should always finish rounds. Prabhupada said if you don't finish rounds one day, you have to finish the next day before, or make up the rounds before you eat. He probably gave that instruction. But, you know, there are different circumstances. People do get sick. You know, people have things happen in life. There are different circumstances. And probably was practical in that regard. And the Guru is practical. If the Guru is just like ritualistic, it's not such a good relationship. If you just, you know, if you say, Gurudev, you know, that I have to do this, that, I've been sick, you know, with high fever, I have Ebola, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the Guru says, that means you're going to hell. I mean, you better think twice about accepting that Guru, mm-hmm. if he tells you that. I mean, you've got to really, it has to be a back and forth relationship with the Guru. But under ordinary circumstances, yes, 16 rounds. For regulated principles, the Guru can't ask the Guru, well, Gurudev, I need to find a girlfriend or something. My wife's not pretty enough. You know, you don't want to do that. But, then, you know, there's certain circumstances. Like one of the things, we don't take garlic. But if you have an infection, you can take garlic. You know, because that's the best antibacterial, antiviral. So there's certain circumstantial things that where there's some adjustment. But certainly you wouldn't offer it to the deities. Krishna doesn't like garlic bread. Neither the devotees like it, so anyway, because it's bad breath. So, any other questions? Yeah.
Thank you. At the start, you talked about intelligence and emotions. I've asked this question before. How if we get too emotional, we should use our intelligence to restrain our emotions.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you agree that our emotions also direct our intelligence as well?
Emotions direct the intelligence advanced stage when you're a pure devotee, then the emotions can be trusted because they're actually bhavas, and you know, you just let it out. It's like ecstasy. But when one's a neophyte, one has to be very, very careful because the emotions can mislead one very, very easily. You know, you can think that something spiritual and ecstatic. I mean, like I said, people do listen to this Mayavadi who chants, and they say, wow, it's real ecstatic. I feel real Krishna conscious when I listen to it. But actually, they're in complete Maya. Because the problem with being a conditioned soul, amongst other problems, is if you do make mistakes, you have a tendency to be illusional, imperfect senses, and you have a tendency to cheat others. These are the four details that a conditioned soul, concomitant factors for a conditioned soul. So we have to be very careful and be humble enough to understand that I can make mistakes. I can think something spiritual, which is actually material, or vice versa. So therefore, that's where the intelligence comes in. And that's why we have to study Shastra, you know, the books, to understand what is right, what is wrong, what is a good path, how to make a decision in life. I mean, just like, you know, I've given the example sometimes before, you know, We all have these impulses, like I mentioned, the pizza, of course. But then I was in Serbia one time, driving with one of my disciples, and I saw there was a hang gliding place. You know what hang gliding is?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always wanted to do it. And I said to him, hang gliding, can we go? And he said, sure, Guru Dave, we can go. I said, well, have fun with the Guru. But anyway, so then we were driving, and then I said, well, I don't think Krishna would be pleased if I did that. So I used my intelligence to sort of like control that. And then also I thought, well, if I got hurt, how would I explain it to the other devotees? I could say I was dancing ecstatically and broke my legs, you know. But you know, and then if there's a picture on Facebook of me flying through the air, you got to be careful. Nowadays you can't get away with any damn thing.
Yeah.
It all ends up on Facebook. What are you doing there? You know? So anyway, so I used the intelligence, even though there was an impulse, you know, the motions, because it would kind of be fun, wouldn't it? To jump off a cliff, you know, and just like...
I'm free,
you know, because we all like to be free, so flying through the air without being surrounded by all this metal, like in an airplane, would be fun. Or parachute jumping. Isn't it? It'd be fun, but I'm not going to do it because it's not what my spiritual master would like. So therefore, I control it with intelligence. Yeah.
Reading non-ISKCON literature is also quite dangerous. Like Mahabharata written by or commented by somebody else. They say Mahabharata is a myth. So when you read these sort of books, our faith can be affected. So.
Yeah, you have to be careful who is translated, who is commented, and everything like that. Yeah, I mean, like, for those of you from Fiji, the Tulsidas Ramayana, Prabhupada said, has a tinge of Mayavadi philosophy in it. Mm. So you have to be really careful. I mean, sometimes in preaching to people, we can give a quote from it, because it helps bridge. I mean, Ras Bihari does that, which is nothing wrong with that. But, you know, there's Mayavadi philosophy in there. I mean, just like, recently, you know, I watched this new Mahabharata series, and there's actually some Mayavad stuff in it. Like Krishna is depicted as being controlled by the time factor in that particular. Has anyone seen that series?
Yeah.
And that's really impersonalism there.
Yeah, it's very subtle, but those things are.
It's very subtle. You know, yeah. Devotees usually won't pick it up, but Krishna is actually depicted as being under the control of karma or time. He knows what's going to happen. You know, you have the omniscient aspect of Krishna being depicted, that he knows what the future is going to be, but he can't control it. It's all out of his hands. So that's actually Mahabharata philosophy right there.
The older version of that Mahabharata Guru, it's quite like shows that Krishna controls everything.
Yeah, but this particular version doesn't. So you have to be really careful, because you can get a philosophical misunderstanding by reading something that's not done by someone who's up to the mark. Yeah.
Is consciousness is the voice of the soul?
Consciousness is a quality of the soul. The voice of the soul is how the consciousness is expressed. But that's consciousness is an inherent quality of the soul, and sometimes the consciousness is covered. It's in an unnatural state. But the soul always has that consciousness, but sometimes it's covered.
Some people don't discover it towards the end of the life even.
Some people never discover it.
Yes. But everyone has got that, is that?
Everyone is conscious. Has consciousness as part of the soul. But some people realize it, some people don't. For many, many lifetimes. So we'll probably, one
just
more question.
A really quick one. A lot of the time, describe like that. One lakh is 64 ounces.
One lakh is approximately.
Yeah, why they do like extra? Because it's 58, but
yeah.
64. What?
Because it sounds good. It's an even number. It's a lucky 64 is a lucky number. It sounds good. You know, it's 64. And, you know, it's an even number. You know, 58 doesn't sound so romantic. 64 also, it's good with computers.
Mm.
you have 64, 128, you know, because this is, you know, part of the binary system. Mm. So those of you who know about computers. So, you know, obviously it's not the same amount, 1 lakh, but it's an approximation. I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah. So if you do, like, 58, would that fall under, like,
Chaitanya? Yeah, you're doing a lakh. Like, yeah, you're doing a lakh. Yeah, that's true. That's true. You're doing a lakh. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur rounded it up to 64. So I guess it's easier to chant 58 than 64.
Mm-hmm.
You got, you know, 6 less rounds. But what I experienced, thank God, you know, 6 less, I get to chant less. But what I experience is that when I get up that high, it just keeps coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my experience is when you chant 64, you don't stop at even 64. Because it becomes like, you become so ecstatic at that whatever you think, it's just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And when you go to sleep that night, it's Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So you're actually chanting much more than 64. I mean, the momentum, I've gone up to much more than 64 just because of the momentum. I intended to chant 64, but the momentum carried me further.
Yeah.
So I think when you get up to 58, it's just like, might as well go to 64. And, you know, originally Prabhupada said when the grahasas are going to have a relationship to procreation, Prabhupada said 50 rounds. 50 rounds before that. That's the garbhanam sanskara, they chant 50 rounds. 50 rounds is very little. 64 is the minimum. And basically we should be like Haridas Thakur. 192 rounds. I mean, you could do that and still go to work and still take care of your family. I mean, it's not that difficult. 192. I have one friend who sometimes would chant 192 rounds. He's at Govardhan. His name is Jamuna Jivana. And he takes care of the Uddhava temple. He doesn't chant 192 anymore because he's doing some writing and taking care of the deities more. But he would chant sometimes 192 or at least 128, you know, like that. So he's a really good devotee. Some of you have met him?
Yeah.
Jamuna Jivana at the Uddhava Temple. Okay, I think we have to go. We have a schedule, and I got to do my deity worship. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Can someone check to see how many people are watching? Can you go on the internet and look at Mayapur TV? You know how to do that?
Yeah.
Mayapur TV. I want to see him before I sign off. Because it'll say under my name. Does it work? Your internet's not working. That's it. Under Veer Krishna Goswami? What is it? How many? Oh, you don't have to sign on to me. It says it on the first page. It's just 8 people. Okay, not too bad.